It's one of the most controversial Catholic Church teachings, contraception. This is Dive Deep. From the Diocese of Springfield in Illinois, this is Dive Deep, where we dive deep into our Catholic faith. I am Andrew Hansen. Please be joined by Bishop Thomas John Papraki of our diocese. Bishop, good to see you. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Always good to be with you, Bishop Papraki. Today we're going to talk about one of those Catholic Church teachings that so many people struggle with understanding, why the Catholic Church opposes contraception. We're going to talk about that. Also, would it be morally okay for a woman to use birth control if she's actually using it to prevent other things such as cramping, ovarian cysts, or excessive bleeding? Is there a moral line there? What about natural family planning? This is what the Catholic Church teaches is the morally acceptable way when it comes to the sexual act. But is it more like, quote, Catholic birth control that some argue? So we're going to get into all that here on Dive Deep. The first thing I want to ask Bishop Papraki, let's just start at the beginning. Explain why the Catholic Church opposes contraception.
Well, I think you have to start with what the church stands for as opposed to what are we against. And in that regard, the teaching on contraception really flows from our teaching on the beauty of marriage and the meaning of marriage. And so the classic document that addressed this most directly was Pope Paul VI's encyclical Humanae Vitae in 1968. Humanae Vitae, Latin for of human life. And what's really beautiful about that letter is the teaching about marriage. And unfortunately, you know, many people, the only thing they know about Humanae Vitae is the negative part is that you can't use artificial contraception, but it says a lot more than that. So it starts out with some beautiful teachings about marriage. And what the church teaches about marriage is that there are really two purposes of marriage. One is what's called the unitive, which is the love between husband and wife and expression of that love. But then the second is a procreative. But they're related to each other because to love someone, when a husband and wife say, I love you and I give myself totally to you, you're also giving to your spouse the ability to procreate. And so to say that, all right, you have a married couple and I'm giving myself totally to you, except we're going to have some limitations on the second part, on the procreation part of that. And that's where the difficulty starts to come in. Because then the problem with artificial contraception then is that you're using an artificial means, like the pill, as they call it, to interfere with that second purpose of marriage. So the couple is still engaging in the sexual act, but they are holding something back. They're saying, okay, we are expressing our love for each other, but we are not open to the openness of life. And that's also the fact that God is part of a marriage. We consider marriage between the baptized as sacramental. God is there, he's present. And so God, who is the creator, and that word procreation even is well chosen because it expresses really how a husband and wife procreate. They create together with God, who is the creator of all human life. So that's where the negative is not just the church coming out with, you know, for whatever arbitrary reason, we don't like contraception. No, it's because it is contrary to the positive aspects of the total giving of husband and wife to each other in marriage.
Now, what about if a woman uses birth control, the pill you mentioned, for other reasons? You have, you know, cramping, ovarian cysts, excessive bleeding. What if she chooses to use birth control to help with those aspects, and that is her intention, but as a side effect of that, knowing most likely she won't be able to get pregnant. Is that morally okay for her to choose to use birth control if those are her reasons why?
Yes, because the important distinction there is in terms of the intention. And so when a person is intending to do a good thing, but there's a negative consequence to it that is not intended, then that brings into what the church calls the principle of double effect, where you have two effects that come out of this. You have a good effect and you have a negative effect. Another example of that is where you have a woman who's pregnant, but her uterus is cancerous. And so the removal of the uterus to prevent the spread of cancer is going to result in the termination of that pregnancy. But that, again, is a principle An example of the principle of double effect, where the intention is to save her from dying of cancer, the unintended consequence is the death of that unborn baby. And so the same thing applies here. I remember my father dealing with this issue because he was a pharmacist, and we had a family pharmacy, literally lived above the store. And the pill, as it was called, artificial contraception by medication, came about in the early 1960s. So I was a young boy at the time, and I remember my dad talking about that. It was a question about whether or not he should fill prescriptions for the pill. And my dad was very serious about his Catholic faith. He was a former seminarian who became a pharmacist, and he ran his pharmacy in accord with Catholic principles. For example, we never sold condoms in our pharmacy, much to the chagrin of some of our customers. I remember sometimes men coming in the store asking for condoms, and I helped, as a salesperson in the store, I said, "I'm sorry, we don't sell those." And they would look at me befuddled, like, "This is a pharmacy and you don't sell condoms?" It's like, "No, we don't." And so it was a moral issue for my dad about even filling prescriptions. And I remember him going to a meeting of Catholic pharmacists where they had one of the auxiliary bishops of Chicago come in and talk about that. And so he mentioned this specific example that sometimes you have a medication that can be used for multiple purposes. And so that's really between the doctor and the patient. And in that case, the prescription comes in and it's for an oral contraceptive. And the moral reasoning was that the pharmacist it was not his responsibility to ask the patient or the customer, "What are you using this for?" If the doctor could be the doctor was prescribing it for some other condition for which that particular medication could be used, and an unintended consequence would be that it serves as a contraceptive. And so there is that distinction there.
Big thing there I take away is the intention, and yes, to also not rationalize your decision when taking contraception. Now, another moral question I want to talk about is, would it be morally okay for someone to take contraception? Or I say, would the church be more, say, you can take contraception if you're going to get pregnant and you know you're going to get an abortion, we would rather have you use contraception. Would the church be okay with that?
Well, I think the difficulty there is that's a slippery slope that I think allows people to rationalize. Mm-hmm. You know, say, "Well, I know a contraception is wrong, but I guess I'll use it because that'll prevent me from having an abortion." I really don't think it's a good example or good practice for us to say, "I'll do something that will prevent me from, I'll do something sinful because that'll prevent me from doing something that's even more sinful." That would be my approach to that.
Gotcha. Catholic Church teaches, we talk about contraception. Let's talk about the flip side, natural family planning. This is what the Catholic Church teaches, NFP for short. This is where couples abstain from sex during the woman's fertile window if they want to not have children, of course, engage in the sexual act during that fertile window to try to conceive. Some have argued that, okay, if you are practicing NFP during that if your goal is to not get pregnant, how is that not, quote, Catholic birth control? How do we respond as Catholics that says, "Well, no, there's actually a beauty behind NFP and still doing the sexual act with your spouse, not doing his or her, the fertile window of the woman, that's okay"?
Well, the difference there is between the fact with artificial contraception, the couple is still engaging in the marital act, the conjugal act, whereas with natural family planning, as you mentioned, they're looking at cycles, and during the period when the woman may be fertile, they're abstaining from sex. So that's an important distinction there, because in that first situation where you're using artificial contraception, you're denying, as I said earlier, one of the ends of marriage. You're taking the procreative act, the conjugal act, by its nature is twofold. It's to express love between the husband and wife, but also the openness to having children. And so by using artificial contraception, you're taking away that second purpose. And you say, we're going to engage in sexual relations simply for, we want even either for our pleasure or for expressing love, but then you're taking away the second aspect of that. Natural family planning is saying that during certain periods of time, we will abstain from sexual relations, but when we do have sexual relations, they will be fulfilling both of those purposes of expressing love between husband and wife and being open to the possibility of having children. So I think that's a very qualitative distinction or difference between the two.
Even though if you are, having sex with your spouse purposely during those non-fertile windows and you're trying to not conceive, that wouldn't still be considered, quote, birth control.
No, because I think that, I don't know that it's 100% guarantee that your natural family planning is not going to result in a conception. So I think even in those situations, you're saying you're maybe trying to be prudent in terms of when are we ready to have a larger family, but at the same time saying, well, I want to express love with my spouse, but at the same time saying that, there is a possibility, even if it's remote, that my wife could get pregnant at that moment. So there's still that conceptual openness to procreation.
Now, one argument we hear from those who don't support the Catholic Church's teaching on contraception and everything we're discussing is, well, this is just a church of men who are celibate making all these archaic rules. How do we respond as Catholics? How do you respond as a bishop when people say, well, you're not married. You don't know what we're going through. You don't, you're just a bunch of celibate men.
Well, I don't think you necessarily have to experience something to know what's right or wrong. I mean, a doctor doesn't have to have every sickness before he can prescribe a medication or take care of a sick client. And so I think the same thing in the church, that we have the teachings that have been handed down to us by our Lord and by tradition of centuries of church teaching. And so I think that it's not simply a question of only people who have experienced something can make a determination of what's right or wrong. I think that those things can be deduced in a rational way. By our teachings.
Now, I know in that same vein, people accuse the church of being the church of no, no contraception, no sex before marriage, and you can't live with your future spouse before you get married. Sounds like a bunch of rules, sounds like a bunch of no, no, no. But we in the Catholic Church have argued, no, actually we're the church of yes. And that's very, you might hear that, you're like, wait, what? You just laid out all these things I can't do. How are you the church of yes? Explain how having rules actually makes us more free, and then by that very nature makes us the church of yes.
Well, I would say that we are the church of yes, and particularly with regards to marriage, because we are protecting the value of the yes that a husband and wife give to each other when they get married. And that's what what marital consent is. It's the spouses saying to each other, I give myself totally to you. And that's such a beautiful value that it means that we don't want to weaken it, or we don't want to somehow have other ways that are going to detract from the beauty of doing that. So, for example, why is the church opposed to sexual relations outside of marriage? Well, because if you have sexual relations outside of marriage, well, then you're detracting from the beauty of that being something that is specifically reserved for that moment. The purpose of sexuality is for that, the love between a husband and a wife, and not just for some fleeting pleasure of a one-night stand. So I think all of the no's are really the flip side of a even stronger yes. And to protect that yes of what's so important about that there have to be some things that say, well, no, if you do these things, you are basically tearing down the positive aspects that we're trying to protect here.
Final question for you, Bishop Opraki. I remember a homily you gave years ago about when you ask a young couple who's about to get married, when you ask, why do you want to marry your future spouse? And a common answer is, well, he makes me happy, or she makes me happy. And that's the wrong answer. The answer should be, well, I want to make her happy. I want to make him happy. And I'll admit, when I heard you say that homily, if you would have asked me that question when I was dating my wife or about to get married, I probably would have answered, well, she makes me happy. Mm-hmm. And that frame, to just shift your frame of mind, that marriage is actually intended for the good of the other. I want you to expound on that, because that's so key for healthy marriages, happy marriages, holy marriages.
Yes, and I want to clarify too that to say that this person makes me happy is not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, that's a natural reaction, and perhaps that's a gift from God itself, is that the attraction between two people is, yes, there's something in there that says this. I like this person. This person makes me happy. But I think what I'm trying to say is true love goes beyond that, because if you stay there, then it becomes very selfish. I just want this person because this person fulfills something for me. Whereas the love, by definition, the definition of St. Thomas Aquinas, love is to will the good of the other. What is the best for the other person? And so if you really love someone, you say, I love you. Well, that's very different from saying, I want to marry you because you make me happy. No, I want to marry you because, most people don't say it that way. I want to marry you because you make me happy. They say, I want to marry you because I love you. And well, then if you really love that person, you want the best for that person, and you want to make that person happy. So I think people truly, they fall in love, but they grow in love as well. So that may not be there in its intensity right at the beginning. Maybe, as I said, there's a little bit of just natural attraction in terms of this person makes me feel happy. But then as you grow in love, I think what truly happens is you say, I love this person so much that my spouse's happiness is more important than my own happiness. And that's when you truly are in love.
Well, I will say, you kind of blew my mind when you gave that homily. And I was like, you know what? Bishop Oprocki is right. And ever since you said that homily, I have used that line before, to have that shift of mind that says, you know, you should always really be thinking of someone else. Because yeah, it's same thing as going to Mass. When you say, why do you go to Mass? Well, I love the homily, or I love the music. It makes me feel really energetic. To your point, all good things. But if your answer starts with, well, I, you're missing out on, you're actually there to worship God.
Right.
So again, I think that's really important to know. Maybe we should have that conversation another time when it comes to why should you go to Mass. Bishop Oprocki, always good to see you. Thanks for all these answers, helping to clear it all up.
You're welcome. God bless.
This has been Dive Deep. If you'd like more podcasts, head over to our YouTube page, youtube.com/DioSpringfield. Until next time, we'll see you right here on Dive Deep.